It's time for Operation Freedom with your host, Dr. Dave Janda, on Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse, Wham Talk 1600.
Welcome back to Operation Freedom, folks. I'm Dr. Dave Janda, broadcasting from our ancillary bunker, linked to our main freedom bunker in the People's Republic of Ann Arbor. We're here for you every Sunday afternoon, 24/7. At DaveJanda.com with extra shows, content, guests, analysis, archives to all of our shows. We hope you become part of our Freedom family. Join our family at DaveJanda.com. Sign up for the email and premium service content service, the content of which I do another 4 to 5 video format shows every week. Content I cannot discuss on the radio because of the FCC. Content I cannot discuss on any social media platform because of the deep state choke points that are in every social media platform that blocks content, censors content, and shadow bans all of us. I hope you'll become part of our freedom family. You know, on January 8th, 2021, I was banned from X or Twitter for making the following statement. COVID is the freedom-stripping virus which adversely affected the 2020 election. I've asked to be reinstated a couple dozen times. Hasn't happened. That statement in January 8th of 2021 was more than accurate. In fact, that's why I was banned by the medical industrial complex, the gatekeepers in the system, by the Faucis of the world. And my next guest is one of the very few people who, as a physician, also stood up for truth and facts and data and science and was targeted and was threatened. But she continued on. In addition to being a high-profile, outstanding healthcare provider on the front line in the healthcare world, Dr. Kristen Held is also a phenomenal healthcare policy analyst. Kristen also, during the midst of COVID, was the president of the finest and the best medical society group on the planet, that organization being the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPSonline.org. The reason why I say that is the AAPS does not take any money from big pharma or big medicine. They are truly independent. And they took positions during COVID that were based on the science, facts, and data, as opposed to the propaganda that ultimately killed millions of people around the world. It's my privilege, pleasure, and honor to welcome back Dr. Chris Held. Chris, welcome back.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on. Happy Sunday to you.
Well, thank you. Chris, I want to, same to you. Chris, I want to touch on a couple issues that came to light this week and get your take. The first is a very sad, and I'm very, very sad situation in Nashville, Tennessee, that happened the end of this week, this past week, at Ascension Hospital Complex, St. Thomas in Nashville. Four patients were undergoing elective procedures and were administered a spinal anesthetic. And rather than the anesthesia that was supposed to be administered, reportedly there was a mix-up in the hospital pharmacy and what was injected. And it was a small amount, but still it doesn't matter. It was potassium chloride. One of the patients was 72 years of age and developed paralysis, still has paralysis from the waist down. And three of the other folks, their identities have not been come forward. Reportedly, at least one of the people was a very young person who was having a procedure that I have done actually thousands of times, a knee arthroscopy. When situations like this happen, whether it's the COVID recommendations or something like this, we all have to look at and say, well, what happened and how do we prevent this? So, Chris, educate our listeners in your take on the situation that developed in Nashville.
So, Dave, first of all, I think it's tragic, and I am so sorry for the patients who suffered this severe complication of anesthesia and the doctors and surgeons and everyone involved. But this is something that we could have all seen coming. You know, you mentioned my interest in health policy, and we have had destructive health policy, just dominoes falling upon one another for the last, 40, 50 years, really since we developed Medicare and Medicaid, which was the beginning of socialized government top-down to totalitarian medicine. And a couple things that were in Obamacare, I think, led to this. Remember how they said there could be no more physician-owned hospitals? If you wanted to have a physician-owned hospital after Obamacare, you couldn't do it. So now all of a sudden, physicians who were the captain of the ship, the ultimate responsibility lied with us. The patients were our. We didn't leave the bedside. We didn't leave the OR. We saw everything from beginning to the end. Was changed. And now the ship was the captain. The hospital and the hospital administrators now were the ones that made all the policy decisions, and physicians have become increasingly employees. A second thing is that this disparity in pay, if you do a procedure in the hospital, there's much more pay from the government than if you do it outpatient. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you're going to do your knee scope or replacement outpatient, you will be paid less at an ambulatory surgery center than if it is done in the hospital. So therefore, now more procedures are done in the hospital by employed physicians and surgeons because the hospital gets paid more, and then you are also, again, subject to hospital and J-COL rules and policies. So there's a really bizarre policy that came up for hospitals to get paid by Medicare and money. They said that, and everyone can look this policy up, the hospital pharmacies have to make up the meds and send them to the OR or wherever you are. Mm-hmm. And this is just another problem, another link in the chain of command that could lead to a mistake and a problem. So instead of the physician, the anesthesiologist drawing up the medication, looking at it and inject it, they received medication sent up from the pharmacy. So at some point, the surgeon is still the captain of the ship, the anesthesiologist, but they were subjected to poor policy, and all the way along the line, this could have all stopped. And, you know, Dave, when we talk about physician being captain of the ship, many other things changed. Remember, when we were residents and when we practiced, we would never leave the OR. Now students and residents they clock in and out. You've been in the OR long enough, you got to go. It's shift work, and it changes the mentality from this is my patient, my complete ownership. I love my patient. When I operate on them, it is the most intimate, important thing you can do in someone's life. Well, the current situation demeans that and minimizes it and makes you go from feeling responsible for the patient and this is all my fault to I was just doing what I was told. It's a team-based approach. It's not my fault. This stuff happens.
Well, and I agree with you. Actually, this what happened in Nashville, actually, I agree with you. You can actually look at the origins of it from an Obamacare standpoint, right? You're right. Those of us that had a say in what was occurring in medicine were pushed to the side, as predicted, when Obamacare came into being. And the bean counters that had no functional medical knowledge took over how hospitals were run, bought practices where physicians became just employees. And what they tended to do is, and this used to infuriate hospital administrators. In my entire career, I only got along with two hospital administrators. To this day, Chris, if a hospital administrator sees me in a store, other than those two hospital administrators, they run away from me. because they just don't want to have contact with me because I go after them. Okay. But hospital administrators, the first thing they do, you know, I used to say to them, are you going to try to run this hospital like you ran General Motors into the ground? Because this time, rather than not having enough cars or bad cars available for people, what you're going to do is you're going to kill people. Well, the first thing they do is they cost cut. Now, cost cutting can be okay, but the way they do it is they take the most senior people and they fire them. And they put people in positions that don't have the necessary experience. So this is how you get somebody that's supposed to be making up a lidocaine injection or a bupivacaine injection, and they're making up potassium chloride, right, and sending it up to the OR. And as you said, Chris, in the, quote, old days, the anesthesiologists in their cart would have lidocaine, bupivacaine, you name it, and they would personally look at the bottle, they'd show it to a nurse, another trained professional, okay, and pull the medication out of the bottle, and that's what they would use for their spinal, right?
Correct. Dave, can you imagine? This is horrible, these people being paralyzed going in for elective procedures. And think about an epidural is done on women who go in to have a baby.
Oh.
This could have happened. You go in to have your baby, and you come out paralyzed or dead, based on flawed hospital and policy that is only implemented because they want to get maximum reimbursement from government payers. And we saw this. It's all reimbursement coding based. They are doing things that are dangerous to patients just so they can potentially collect more money. And, you know, when you think about this, Dave, here's an example. I operate and do cataract surgery at an outpatient ambulatory surgical center. Well, they came to us, and we were really having trouble getting anesthesia because all the anesthesia was getting in groups were getting employed by the hospital. Well, they came to us and said, well, you know what? Right now, what you're going to do is you're going to just, if you want anesthesia, you're going to have to take who you get that day. You'll just have whoever's left over from the hospital will come over and provide anesthesia. Well, I'm sorry, Dave, that is absolutely unacceptable. And I said, absolutely not. In my whole career of operating, I have had three anesthesiologists that I've worked with week in and week out, day in and day out, because we are a team. And I want to be my team to be the best team for my patient. I don't want to be meeting a new anesthesiologist every week that doesn't know what I do. I don't know what they do. It's like going home to a new spouse every night. I want to have that same team. And like you said, I want to have the best nurses. I want to know that what I'm injecting in the eye will not blind the patient. That what we're injecting the patient for anesthesia, monitored anesthesia care, will not stop their heart and kill them. These are important things. And I will tell you the way this is being played. I have a dear, dear, dear trusted medical colleague, okay, who they is a dermatologist, and they decided to make dermatology a hospital-based specialty, okay, at this hospital, because they would get paid more. So this dermatologist went over to do some service there and training and needed to do some Botox injections. She was not allowed to drop her own. She was told it had to be sent up from the pharmacy. And when it was sent up, it was completely the wrong concentration, completely not what the experienced doctor would do. I mean, you'd be putting so much Botox and solutions in someone's forehead, you know, you'd have to have a balloon over your head. And this is just, that physician finally said, this is just unethical, forget it. So we've got hospitals and institutions, academic institutions, making decisions based on money that can cause damage to patients. And now we're coming up with this whole new crop of physicians and nurses and quote-unquote providers that are just subjects. And I think it's absolutely tragic. And this is just an ultimate example of that. And I hope that it will wake people up and that we as physicians must go back and say we are the captain of the ship. It is our responsibility. You know, this week in the OR, they gave me a different medication I inject at the end of the case because they were out of it. But my nurses said, Dr. Held, this is different. And because I tell them everything I inject, everything we can do is essential. Mm-hmm. It is the A team. And I was able to look and say, you're exactly right. It's a different concentration. This changes things. We communicate one-on-one. I don't get something just sent up to me in a hospital just so they can make more money.
Right. And I think a real important take-home point for folks is that, and this is, again, this is exceedingly rare what happened in Nashville, right? In my career before I retired, our office manager came to me and said, you know, Dave, we ran your numbers over all the years, your 32 years, and you had over 150 outpatient visits, folks you took care of, and you did over 16,000 operations. Okay. So in my experience, I never had something like this happen. On the other hand, procedures were different through the vast majority of my career, right? And I was one of the obstinate ones that refused to have certain things changed because I didn't want to have something like this happen. If you're going to have a surgery coming up, I think you need to ask your doctor, how do we make sure that something doesn't happen that happened in Nashville? Tell me, doctor, in the facility that we're going to do this procedure, what steps have been taken so something like that doesn't happen? I think that's a fair question. Am I off, Chris?
No, I think we absolutely have to. Physicians are being, when practices are being employed by hospitals and brought up by private equity, and the physicians are rewarded and pushed to have 7-minute visits and do more cases, you are increasing the chance of having errors because you're not looking at that patient in the eye. You're not establishing that relationship. And what patients need to do, the onus is on patients too. You need to demand from your insurance company, your employer, whoever it is, that every year you are not getting shifted to a different doctor. There needs to be continuity of care. Remember, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor? Absolutely not. The doctors are, many good doctors are like, I've had it. A lot of them, our vintage, Dave, are retiring, are leaving early. We have problems. And patients need to demand of their insurance company that they have access to doctors and specialists, time with their doctors and specialists. Mm-hmm. Because right now, the bottom line is that the patient's life and well-being and medications are not what's important. It's become, as you said, a medical industrial complex where the hospitals, big pharma, big insurance, and big money, big government power, political, are the point of concern. The patient, the physicians are way down the chain of command.
And folks, we're speaking with Dr. Chris Held. And Chris, I now want to touch on another issue that developed this week. We have discussed over the many years the reason why the COVID jab was such an issue was because it was an experimental platform that really wasn't a vaccine. It was, in fact, a gene-altering intervention, so-called based on the mRNA platform. In the past couple weeks, the FDA approved Moderna's new flu shot that is mRNA-based. Right, so it's back to the future. This is deja vu all over again, as Yogi Bear would say. Now, I want your take on this. The McCullough Foundation, Pete McCullough, friend of both yours and mine, and through the McCullough Foundation, did a study. And what they did is they've now submitted this to RFK Jr. And when they looked at the Moderna data, to prevent one flu hospitalization, based on this new flu shot, 5,017 people must be injected at the cost of roughly 2 excess unexplained deaths. This is just to prevent one hospitalization. 278 disabling significant adverse grade 3 reactions and nearly 4,000 total adverse events.
Well, it's shocking, isn't it, Dave? We didn't learn our lesson, and we're still learning our lesson with the mRNA COVID shots, which still remain on the market. And so they're going to just go down the failed pathway again. What's very sad about this new mRNA influenza vaccine that it was, once again, they did not have a placebo control. The control, it was compared in both of the big trials to active flu vaccines. Well, there's already problems when people have a current flu vaccine. The efficacy is poor. In fact, last year and the year before, I think you were more likely to get the flu after taking the flu vaccine.
That was a Cleveland Clinic study. Clinic study. You had a 23% larger risk of, you got a 23% higher chance of getting the flu if you took last year's flu vaccine than if you did not get it. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Yes. And so as you said, Dave, so what are they doing with these mRNA? What's the benefit? And you have to vaccinate 5,017 people to keep one out of the hospital. And you exchange that for, if you had the old flu vaccine, about 1,400 had, you know, adverse effects, to now almost 4,000 having adverse effects. And so there were still problems with the current flu vaccine.
Right.
You know, people were having grade 3 problems means you feel so bad you don't go to work. So you get the shot, you feel bad and don't get to work, just like if you didn't have the flu and can't go to work. But there were more, you know, 6 times more grade 3 problems with the mRNA one. And you mentioned the 2 unexplainable deaths. So it makes absolutely no sense why they were doing this. And, you know, when Vinay Prasad was there and some of the people that they brought into the FDA that would actually look at the studies and look at the data and not the statistics games that are played by the big pharmaceutical companies, it wasn't even going to get brought up for approval. Well, so of course, he wasn't long for the FDA. This is what happens. The people that stand up for it, you know, are out the door, and then they bring in whatever medication they want, you know, the big companies like Moderna and Pfizer and on and on. I mean, if you look what happened to stock recently when they just talked about cancer vaccines. So it's all a big money and power game and, you know, patients' health be darned and well-being. And so I think it's tragic. I would not want to take that mRNA flu vaccine.
No.
And much less, I'm not taking any flu vaccine this year.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm not going to, Dave.
That brings us, I'm not either, and I haven't, and I won't. This brings us to the third issue. Moderna this week, you touched on this, stated that their mRNA-based cancer vaccine combined with another drug, Keytruda, put out by Merck, it had better results for skin cancer than Keytruda alone, and it was a press release. Chris, when they were pushed for the data, there was none. They had no studies, no data, no hazard ratio, no confidence interval, no p-value, no safety data, nothing. And the stock price went up 150%.
It's amazing, isn't it, Dave? It's just shocking. And you look at our legislators and congressmen and, you know, I wonder how everybody, I'd love to look at, you know, Nancy Pelosi's, what her stock portfolio did last week. You know, it's just criminal. And when you look back at what else happened this week with Fauci and Morans, his fall guy, pleading guilty to, you know, hiding gain-of-function research grants and poor pregnant women being subjected to COVID vaccines when they knew ahead of time that miscarriage in the first trimester was high risk. It's just tragic. And I pray that we will get back on track because pretty soon you don't believe anything. You just don't believe anything.
And that's where people have to step in themselves and ask their doctors the hard questions. Why are you pushing this? Give me the data, give me the information, give me the solid scientific evidence. Chris, what's the most effective way in our last 15 seconds for folks to follow you?
Okay, I'd love to follow everybody on X, Chris Held MD, KKS Held, follow AAPS Online, Independent Medical Alliance, Honest Medicine.